WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 15th of January, 2020. This morning, we're going to have a double billing. As usual, the first half of the program is going to be a yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with a very interesting guest on that one, with Bob Bailey. In the second half, I'm going to have one I played two months ago, The Tales of the Texas Rangers. It's not quite a Western, but it's kind of led in pretty good by Bob Bailey's performance on episode 572 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This one's titled The Price of Fame. And it had an original air date of the 2nd of February, 1958. And if you're just tuning in, my name is Arthur. You're listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO, and or WMFO.org.
Hollywood. It's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Johnny, this is Vincent Price. I'm calling from Hollywood.
Oh, sure. My name's Shirley Temple. Now, who is it and what? Really, Vincent Price?
Do I sound like Mickey Rooney?
Well, no. But now, tell me, Mr. Price.
Now, look, the name is Vincent.
Okay, Vincent. What can I do for you?
Johnny, I have a little problem in connection with one of my paintings insured for $100,000.
$100,000? You call that a little problem?
This painting has suddenly disappeared.
Oh, I see. What's the insurance company?
Four State Mutual.
Oh, well, they have a small branch office right there in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I know. But Bert Parker, the man who sold me the policy and should take care of this matter, well, every time I've called him, he's been out. And I learned just this morning that nobody knows where he is.
Okay, Vincent, I'll grab the first plane.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
And now, Act One of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Four State Mutual Insurance Company Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Price of Fame matter. Expense account item 1, $178.50, plane fare and incidentals, Hartford to Los Angeles. By the time the big silver Constellation made its landing at the International Airport, it finally dawned on me that I hadn't arranged with Vincent Price about where and how and what time I'd meet him. But as I picked up my luggage, I discovered a hungry-looking crowd of autograph hounds milling about the tall, gracious man I was looking for.
Oh, sure, sure. I'm glad to. Look, but just one at a time, will you please? I can't very well. All right, there you are. Now I have to meet Freddy.
Oh, gee, just one more, please. Huh, Mr. Price?
All right, if you insist. Here. Best wishes from T. Willie Rockinghorn.
Huh?
How are you, Johnny?
Oh, great, but I didn't
Johnny?
Expect...
Johnny who?
You mean to say you folks don't recognize Johnny Dollar?
Oh, no, wait a minute.
Attaboy, Johnny. Give him all. I'll wait for you in my car. It's right over here at the curb.
Yeah, but look, will you? Hey.
Right here, Mr. Price.
No,
you don't. I'm nobody. Please. By the the time I got away from that mob, I felt as though I'd been run through a ringer. But we finally took off in Vincent's car and drove to his beautiful home up in one of the canyons west of Beverly Hills. Nestled among the trees with spacious lawns and well-kept gardens, it's furnished in the most excellent taste. I'm no expert, but to say that I was impressed by the extraordinary works of art in that home would be the understatement of the week. Engravings, prints, fine sculptures, but most of all, paintings. And even to my unpracticed eye, all of them were, well, magnificent.
Here's a little thing I picked up in London, Johnny. It's called The Old Man in Red by Goya.
Wow. Yeah, I thought original oils by him were found only in the big museum.
Well, I've been pretty lucky in getting hold of some of these.
Yeah, you've known what you were doing, too.
You like this one? It's called Fright. It was painted by Kenneth McManus.
Uh-huh. Beautiful. Beautiful. Like all the rest of them.
Thanks. How about this one here at the end?
Night Wind by... I'm sorry, Vincent. I can't make out that name. You don't have this one lighted like the rest.
No, that's to maintain its somber mood, Johnny.
Oh.
And that's what made it possible for the substitution of this copy to go undetected.
That's a copy?
Yeah, and that's my problem. The $100,000 Night Wind by Jean-Baptiste has been stolen. This was left in its place.
Oh, I see.
It's not a bad copy, probably worth a couple of $100, but it's hardly a genuine Baptiste.
Well, when did you discover this substitution, Vincent?
When I returned from a lecture tour early last week.
Oh, that's right. You've been traveling all over the country lecturing on art,
haven't
you?
Well, let's call it talking about art, huh?
Tell me, have you notified the police about this?
I suppose I should have. Well, I felt that was Bert Parker's job.
And you haven't been able to reach him over at Four State Mutual.
As I told you on the phone, he hasn't been in his office for some time.
Vincent, have you any theories about who might have done this?
Yes, I'm afraid I have.
Why do you say it that way?
Very few people knew I'd gotten hold of this Baptiste. Only some close friends and a couple of art experts.
So?
And the place was not broken into during the time I was away. Of that, I'm sure.
Well, go on.
Well, the family and servants kept very close track of anyone who entered the house while I was gone.
You have a list?
Yes, I do have a list. Here.
Good. Alfred R. Hawkinson.
That's an electrician who came to do some wiring. He wouldn't know a Rembrandt from a Mickey Mouse.
Anne M. Schumann.
He's a music teacher. Loves music, hates paintings.
What about delivery boys, people like that?
Oh, they never get beyond the back door. Go on, read on. Hmm? That next one is Ben, the gardener. You can forget about him.
And Bert L... Huh?
Yeah, Bert Parker. He was here twice.
What for?
Well, ostensibly to check on some of the paintings he'd insured. The first time, on the 11th, Mrs. Price was with him while he poked around. On the 15th, she had to leave to keep an appointment. And just when he left the house, nobody seems to know.
Oh, brother. Are you thinking the same thing I am?
Now, look, Johnny, I haven't known Bert very long, and, well, he seemed like such a harmless little old fuddy-duddy. As for his knowledge of art...
Yeah, I wondered about that.
Well, he was perfectly satisfied to take my evaluation on the two or three things he'd insured. So, well, Johnny, I may be all wrong.
Vincent, a thing like this may only happen once in 1,000 years. In any event, the company will certainly make good your loss.
Well, with a work of art, it isn't really the money that counts. And, Johnny, listen. Look, I may have jumped to a completely unjustified conclusion about Bert Parker.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, let's go down to his office and see.
We'll return to Johnny Dollar and the Price of Fame matter. That's Vincent Price in just a moment. And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Price of Fame matter.
A priceless original oil painting stolen from the home of Vincent Price, famous radio and picture star. One of the few people who'd had the opportunity was the man who'd sold him the insurance on it, Bert Parker. Together, we went to Parker's office at Four State Mutual in downtown Los Angeles.
It was on the 16th that Mr. Parker phoned in to say he wasn't feeling very good and wouldn't be in for a day or two.
Hey, it was on the 15th that he was at your house, Vincent.
Yes, that's over 2 weeks ago.
And you haven't heard from him since, Miss Pritt?
No, Mr. Dollar. We've tried calling his apartment, but since there hasn't been anything really pressing here at the office...
What's the address of his apartment, please?
Well, it's out in Westwood, 1308 Pandora Avenue.
Look, Vincent, I'm going out there. I'll call you if I find...
You're going to need transportation, aren't you, Johnny?
By the highest price chauffeur in the country? Sure, why not?
Oh, before you go, Mr. Price, I wonder if... Well, if I could have your autograph.
Why didn't you get Johnny Dollars, Miss Britt? He loves to give them.
Oh, yes.
Oh, no. No, you don't, Benson. Let's go. It took a little persuading, but the landlord at Britt's apartment finally led us into his four-room suite. It was empty, except for a few old clothes, and it was obvious that he'd packed and left in a hurry. I rummaged around in the closets, tables, bureau, for a clue as to where he might have gone, and came up with nothing.
Can you give up, Johnny?
Yeah, Vincent, I'm afraid so.
I poked around that desk some more after you'd finished with it and found this wedged in behind a drawer.
Oh? Travel folder. Paris.
Yeah, it looks real fresh, too.
Minor Travel Agency, Beverly Hills.
Well, what do you think?
Pretty much of a long shot, Vincent.
But they do pay off sometimes, don't they?
Planned a trip for myself, yes, sir. First class all the way.
What was the departure date, Mr. Miner?
16th, first class, straight to Paris.
Oh, brother, Paris is a pretty big place.
Did you make any arrangements for him for after he got there?
Only for when he arrived. Reservation at the Louvois.
What?
The hotel, Louvois.
The Louvois, perhaps.
That's what I said. Oh. First class, too. Said he wanted something not too far from the Montmartre.
Montmartre, if you don't mind.
That's what I said, yes. Now, can I fix you gentlemen up with some plane reservations, too?
Well, suppose you get me the same flight he took, and I'll stop at the same hotel when I get there.
Hey, wait a minute, Johnny. You're not going to leave me out of this.
Well, look, I'm still playing a long shot, Vincent, a very long one.
What's the difference?
Also, I don't know if my expense account will get by the home office.
Expense account? Forget it. I'm having a ball. Mr. Miner, start making those reservations.
Expense account item 2, $984 for the plane to Paris. Well, it turned out to be the most interesting flight I've ever made because of the company of Vincent Price. An amazing conversationalist, he could talk about anything, including art. And he has a tremendous sense of humor. So, as he put it, we had a ball from the time we took off in L.A. till the time we sat down at Le Bourget. Item 3, 520 American, taxi into the Hotel Louvois, where the manager was, somewhat helpful.
Oh, mais oui, mais oui. The Monsieur Parker leave us but only 2 days ago, after some slight misunderstanding about l'addition, the deal.
Yeah, you mean he was running out of money?
Monsieur, I did not say that.
But that's what you meant, isn't it?
You know where he spent his time around here?
But of course. His business, he say, took him constantly to Montmartre.
Where in Montmartre?
Who is to know?
That's like saying somewhere in Brooklyn.
Ah, Brooklyn? Perhaps you know my cousin.
Johnny, I just got an idea.
Shoot.
Works of art, even very good ones, are sometimes sold in rather unorthodox ways. They go through some rather strange hands. They're not always sold over the counter, so to speak, by reputable dealers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but how to contact the kind of people who might... You got any ideas?
Why don't you just go on up to our suite and sit tight for a while, I'll see what I can dig up.
You are keeping something from me, Vincent.
But, Johnny, there are some things even Funk keeps from Wagnalls. I'll see you later.
Act 3 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. And now, Act 3 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Price of Fame Matter.
All of gay, romantic Paris just outside the door and time on my hands. So what did I do? Took Vincent Price's advice, went back to my room at the Hotel Louvois and waited. 2, 3, 4 hours. Finally, shortly after 8 p.m., Vincent came in bearing a couple of packages.
Sorry to have made you wait, Johnny, but... I think I'm on the trail of something.
Looks to me like you've been on a shopping spree.
Props, Johnny. For you.
Have you found out where Bert Parker is?
No, but I think you will. Here, try this on.
What's this all about? A 10-gallon hat.
Yeah, I had to guess at your size.
Where in Paris did you find this?
Try it on.
Oh, what are you... Holy... What am I supposed to be, a refugee from Texas?
Exactly. You made it in oil wells. Your name is Matthew.
Huh?
You're over here to see the sights, all the wild nightlife you've heard about, the Folies Bergères, Rue Blondel, Place Pigalle. Here, try on this shirt.
Oh, brother. Look, I don't know what this is all about, but hadn't we better get something to eat?
Try it on.
If you don't take me to one of the world-famous restaurants in this town...
Maybe tomorrow.
Huh?
Yeah, that's good. That shirt's going to be all right.
What do you mean tomorrow?
Here, now, stick this genuine simulated imitation diamond type stick pin in the front. Wait a minute, I'll do it for you.
Yeah, what the Sam?
There you are, and with this big hunk of glass on your finger. There now, look at you.
Oh, you look, I'm hungry.
Well, maybe you'll even get food where you're going.
Now, where do you think I'm going in this rig?
To a little joint on the Rue Blondel called the Bal Macabre.
Now, what am I supposed to do there, if I go there?
Sit down. Look prosperous. And see what happens.
Oh, Vincent.
Remember, you made it in oil. Millions.
Yeah, but Vincent...
Also, you're interested in art, and your name is Matthew.
Look, will you...
On your way, Johnny. The taxi that's waiting for you out front knows exactly where to take you.
The Bal Macabre was really a joint. It was dirty, and the people packed like sardines in it were dirty, too. Characters who made a business of being characters. And everybody screamed at everybody else. Except, that is, for the wormy little man who sidled up to the postage stamp-sized table on which my glass and a bottle of wine were balanced.
You, pardon. You are Mr. Matthews, are you not?
That's right.
From Texas? No.
Yes, sir, partner. The great and glorious state of Texas. Sit down, pour yourself a glass of this here red ink. Who are you?
They call me La Chagrin.
What does that mean?
Well, what you call the gray cat.
Hey, that's cuter than the name of my old friend Coyote Bill.
Well, do you enjoy the Paris nightlife?
You know something? I'm getting fed up with it. Yeah, I think I'll just buy me a couple of nice pitchers and go on back home.
What kind of pictures, monsieur?
Well, good ones. Oil pictures. Like that Mona Lisa I seen at the Louvre. You know, good ones on me.
Well, like a Jean-Baptiste, perhaps?
You mean you know where a man could get a hold of a genuine one of them?
Well, for a price, of course.
Well, listen, I got money and I'll spend it. Well, I offered them $500,000 for that Mona Lisa, but they turned me down. But if I could get a hold of a genuine Baptiste... Well, partner, you just name the price.
Oh, well, I make no promises, mon ami. But I do have a friend, and for a slight consideration...
Name your price and take me to it.
I will be waiting for you at the corner with the taxi. That is what you call okay?
Okay.
I shall be waiting.
I'll be there, partner. You bet I will. And I'd certainly like to know how Vincent set this up. The taxi dropped us off at one of the most disreputable-looking apartments in the whole of Paris. My friend, who called himself the Great Cat, looked carefully around before entering the front door. Then we climbed four flights of a dark, musty stairway.
Now, remember, my friend, you are not to pay the price he asks at first. If you like, I will make the arrangements for you.
Now, that would be right friendly of you, partner. But how would you come out on this?
Well, all I ask, monsieur, is 10% of what you pay.
And maybe a little extra from him for bringing me up here?
Oh, monsieur.
Oh, now, don't give me that, partner. I've been around. I'm wise to how you fellas operate. But if I can get a hold of a real genuine Baptiste...
You will see.
Yes? Who is it?
I have brought a friend, Monsieur Matthews from Texas.
Yes?
He would like to buy the Night Wind by Baptiste.
That is, if it's genuine.
Genuine? Of course it's genuine. There, on the table. Can't you see for yourself that it's the... Oh, no.
Well, well, Bert Parker.
Johnny Dollar.
That's right. Insurance investigator.
Investigate you? Oh, I just remember somebody is waiting for me.
That's right, I am.
Mr. Price. Oh, no.
Well, pardon, Monsieur Price, but I must go.
Without your fee for taking care of Mr. Dollar?
Listen, both of you, please. I'll give you back the painting. I'll do anything you ask.
Oh, drop dead.
Oh, dear.
Well, Vincent, there it is.
Yep.
And it looks like the company has saved a cool $100,000.
I have a confession to make about that, Johnny.
Yeah, like how you happened to know the way to the painting through that squirmy little fellow who brought me here?
Oh, Well, that's how I got hold of the Batiste in the first place. It's a lovely thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is.
And, Johnny, it is worth $100,000.
Oh, I'm sure.
But the truth of the matter is, I paid only $300 for it.
You paid... Oh, no.
It's a fact.
Well, you've got it back, thanks to your own efforts.
Thanks to your being the front man. If I'd tried to get it back myself, these people would have run like scared rats.
Oh, sure, sure. Just tell me one thing, will you? Why aren't you an insurance investigator?
Well, you know, it's every man to his own... Well, after all, why aren't you an actor?
Let's get out of here. Disposition of Bert Parker? Well, that's entirely up to the company. Vincent, now that he has the painting back, doesn't care one way or the other. However, from the company's standpoint, well, it's not the kind of black eye that's good for you. Expense account total, including incidentals and transportation back to the States, $2,341. Remarks? Well, to Vincent Price, my eternal thanks. Not only for the help on this case, but most of all because it's given me a chance to really know him. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment. Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, the heart of sunny southern Jersey and a case that took a very sudden, very strange twist. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote today's story. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Junius Matthews, Tony Barrett, Horace Lewis, Howard McNear, and of course, our special guest, Vincent Price. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Dan Cumberly speaking.
Thank you, lads. There you have it. The Price of Fame is the title of that. That was episode 572 in the Johnny Dollar series. There were more than one actor portrayed Johnny Dollar. I believe the total was five. But that was Bob Bailey, as you heard, with the special guest Vincent Price. Whoever that was, sounding like the art dealer or the middleman there. He sure sounded like Peter Lorre. That was interesting. I was kind of hoping that was. Again, that had an original air date of the 7th of February, 1958. I'm going to go ahead and fulfill an FCC obligation right now. Thanks.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry. Although, Digital Henry doesn't sound like that anymore. Next up, today's program, By the way, this is Arthur here on the Grand Hour, 91.5 FM, WMFO and or WMFO.org. For the second half of the program, I have Tales of the Texas Rangers. This one's titled No Living Witness. I don't know too much about this series just yet. I played one. I don't know when. End of November, beginning of December. So jury's still out on this one for me in terms of a drama. This one's titled No Living Witness. This had an original air date of the 6th of May, 1951. Thanks for listening.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers. Tonight, transcribed from Hollywood, another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. Texas, more than 260,000 square miles, and 50 men who make up the most famous and oldest law enforcement body in North America. Now, from the files of the Texas Rangers come these stories based on fact. Only names, dates, and places are fictitious for obvious reasons. The events themselves are a matter of record. Case for tonight, no living witnesses.
It is 11:30 a.m., a Monday morning in November 1939. Sheriff Ross Betsby turns his car into a quiet residential street of Harper's Landing, Texas. Seated in the car with him is Mrs. Blackburn, a medical assistant. She becomes increasingly nervous as they approach a sign marking the home of Dr. Walter Hennett.
Now, don't go getting jumpy, Miss Blackburn. There could be 100 reasons for the doc to be missing.
Not Doc Hennett, and you know it. It ain't like him to just disappear. No sign of him since Saturday night. Wasn't at church yesterday, and he ain't at his house this morning. He's always there for visiting hours at 9:30.
So he's probably out on a house call. Maybe over to the hospital at Ridge Hill.
If he was, the phone operator'd know about it. Besides, his car is still in the garage.
Well, here's the house. Better get out of the car and see if we can't raise him.
That's what I've been trying to do all morning.
You sure he wasn't at church yesterday?
Of course I'm sure. He always gave me a ride home to my place, and I'd always make Sunday breakfast for him before he'd start on his house calls. You don't work for a man for 10 years without learning his habits, especially a doctor.
Well, he's got to be around someplace.
Doc! Hello, Doc! Doc! Doc Hammett!
Don't you have a key, Miss Blackburn?
Never needed one before. Front door to the waiting room's always been open, except at night.
Of course, he could have driven off with somebody, but... Oh, I don't know.
But if he's here, why doesn't he answer?
Well, even doctors get sick. And Doc Hammond's no youngster. He might have had a stroke.
Oh. What are you going to do, Sheriff?
We got to get inside. I got no legal right to bust in without a warrant. But that'll take time, and maybe this can't wait.
Why don't you just go in, then? Doc knows you. He'd understand.
If he doesn't understand, I reckon he'll just have to sue me for a broken window. I'll knock this one in with my gun, then I'll climb in and let you in through the door.
Well, hurry.
All right, come in. Where's Doc's bedroom?
Back here.
Not here. Bed's been used, though.
It was all made up Saturday night when I left.
Then he slept here Saturday night. Bathroom door is open. Nothing in there. Reckon we better go through the rest of the house. Kitchen's clear. You can see out back through the windows. There's nothing there either.
Sheriff, I'm frightened.
The sliding door to his office was closed when we come into the waiting room. Better have a look at that office. If he isn't in here, I don't know.
Oh, Sheriff!
Better stay back, Miss Blackburn.
Oh, Dr. Hammond.
Dressed in a robe and pajamas. Oh. Must have had a heart attack. Come in here to get something for it and... Wait a minute.
What is it? Oh, his robe. It looks like blood.
'Tis blood. From a bullet wound. He's been murdered.
Sheriff Betsby made an immediate request for the aid of a Texas Ranger. Ranger Jace Pearson was assigned. He joined the sheriff at the home of Dr. Hemmett shortly after 1 p.m.
Jace, this is Miss Blackburn. She was Doc's helper. This is Ranger Pearson, Miss Blackburn.
Howdy.
Howdy, ma'am.
I asked Miss Blackburn to stay until you got here. Reckon she knows more about Doc than anybody.
I gather you didn't live here in the house, ma'am.
No. I have my own place.
I don't know just what I'd like to ask you yet until I look around. Would you mind waiting a little longer?
I'll stay as long as you need me.
Thanks, ma'am. Where's the body, Sheriff?
In the office. Through that sliding door. I've been keeping it closed off. Nobody's been in here but me and one deputy. He just took a couple of pictures.
Good. Medical examiner been here yet?
No, but he'll be along soon. He's driving down from Hesterville.
Mark alongside the doc's temple here. Bruise about 2 inches long. A pretty heavy blow. Looks like he might have been knocked out with a gun barrel.
Yeah, that figures. Because he wasn't standing up when he was shot. He was lying here on the floor.
What makes you think so?
Bullet went right through the chest and buried in the floor under him. I moved him a little and I dug the slug out. Here. 45.
Yeah. There's something funny about this, though. Quite a bit of blood on this examination table, almost 6 feet away from the body.
Yeah, I wondered about that myself.
The instrument tray and surgical dressings pulled up beside the table. There's a couple of hypodermic needles that look like they've been used.
Well, Jace, Doc couldn't have been trying to treat his own wound. He never moved after he was shot, or that slug wouldn't have been on the floor right under him. Of course, he might have staggered around before he was shot, after he got hit on the head.
It still wouldn't account for the blood on this table. There was no bleeding from the mark on his head.
That means the blood on the table come from somebody else.
Medical examiner can type it for us later. I want to see Mrs. Blackburn for a minute.
We can use some help from you now, Miss Blackburn.
I'll tell you anything I can.
Mrs. Blackburn, was it part of your job to clean the doctor's office?
Yes. Every day after his final visiting hours.
According to the sign outside, his evening hours were from 5 to 7 p.m.
That's right.
You cleaned the place after 7 p.m. Saturday night?
Yes.
What time did you leave?
Well, doctor had a few calls to make after visiting hours. House calls. I waited till he got back and fixed his dinner for him. I reckon it was late when I left. After 10 o'clock.
Uh-huh. Look through the door of the examination room for a minute.
Yes.
Is that surgical tray usually in that position? I mean, did you leave it like that Saturday night?
No. Everything was put away in the cabinet.
How about the examination table? You cleaned that off Saturday night?
Yes.
Was the doctor expecting any patient after you left, late?
No, he said he was going right to bed.
And he must have gone, too, Jace. The bed had been slept in, and you can see what he was wearing.
Poor Doc.
I think it'd be all right for you to go home now, ma'am. If I need any more information, we can reach you there.
Thank you.
Tell the deputy outside that I said to drive you home.
I'd as soon walk. Get some air.
Yes, well, thanks for helping, Miss Blackburn. Well... That settles one thing, Jace. Doc had an unexpected patient late Saturday night. Somebody who routed him out of bed and killed him. But why?
I got an idea. It was to keep the doc from calling you.
Keep him from calling me? What do you mean?
Whoever came here was hurt, bleeding. So it wasn't a planned visit. Not somebody who came here deliberately to kill the doc. Doc was killed to keep him from talking about the visit.
Oh, Doc Hammett would never talk about a patient's business.
Only in one case, where the law would require it. He'd have to report it if he treated anybody for a bullet wound.
Yeah, that's right, Jace. That could be it. That probe on the instrument tray has blood on it. And that's just what a doc could use to dig out a bullet.
I know. I've had a few dug out myself. Let's comb this examination room again.
What are you looking for?
If we're right, the slug Doc Hammett dug out of his patient. We found it, wrapped in a piece of blood-stained gauze in one of the trash containers. There was something else in the container, too, part of a faded blue denim shirt that had been used to bind a wound.
It must have been a bad wound, Jace. That denim was soaked.
Yeah, and take a look at this slug.
Looks like a slug from a Savage 303. But Doc was killed by a .45.
That's natural. The man who came here wounded was shot someplace else by somebody else. Wouldn't be the same gun.
Fellow we're after must have been in a gunfight then.
That's the way it shapes up. With all that blood, he couldn't have come far. Couldn't have waited too long to get to a doctor. And the chances are he wasn't alone. Somebody must have been helping him.
Oh, they could have just left Doc knocked out, trussed him up, and gotten away. Why'd they have to kill him?
I can't answer that one. When the medical examiner gives us the wounded man's blood type, I'm going to send the two slugs we've got through to Austin for a ballistic check. Get a rundown on every police report involving gunplay that took place anywhere within 100 miles of here on Saturday night. The medical examiner came and after a quick check gave us the blood type of the man we were after. I arranged for the two slugs we had to be sent through to Austin. At the same time, phoned for a complete report on all shooting incidents that had occurred on Saturday night. Then the sheriff and I started to drive to his office.
This looks like a tough one to me, Jace. We got a blood type to check for, but I reckon a million people in Texas have type O blood.
Yeah, but not all of them are going to have a recent bullet wound they can't account for.
You're right. If we find one who's been wounded. But for all we know, the man Doc treated might have got himself shot by accident.
If he did, he wouldn't have killed the doc to keep him from reporting it.
Guess you got me hogtied on that point, Jace. But all the same, I don't know.
Hold it a minute, Sheriff.
KTXA to Unit 10.
That's for me. Unit 10 to KTXA. Go ahead.
Have info you requested on cases involving firearms. None reported your general vicinity for Saturday night.
10-4.
There is possible lead, though, Unit 10.
What is it?
Body of man killed by gunfire discovered a few hours ago on slope of Thunder Ridge, Roebling County, about 70 miles west your present location. Time of death not yet determined. Waiting report of medical examiner.
10-4. Is another unit assigned to that case?
Unit 3 covering.
This unit proceeding to join Unit 3 to explore possibility of link between two killings.
10-4. Best approach to scene is west slope of Thunder Ridge. We'll have to leave car, go in mounted.
10-4.
Unit 3 making contact by field set. We'll notify Unit 3 if you're coming.
10-4, Unit 10, clear.
KDXA Austin.
You think that might hook up with us, Jace?
It's the only thing that's turned up. Another Ranger unit's there, Unit 3. That's Steve Clark. We can work it together. Suppose I leave you on deck here to cover anything that turns up.
Suits me. Just drop me at my office. Even if this fellow you're going to see was killed on Saturday night, Jace, it could still be a coincidence.
I know. But it'll stop being a coincidence if he was killed by the same .45 that was used to murder Doc Hammett. I dropped the sheriff off, then headed for Thunder Ridge. When I got to the base, I unloaded charcoal from my horse trailer and started the climb. The sun was sinking as I started up the slope, and darkness came fast. I spotted torches moving like fireflies. I rode for them. Easy, easy, Charcoal. Watch your footing, boy. Hello there.
Hello.
That you, Steve?
Yeah. Jace?
Right. Coming up to you.
Hold up back there. Rest your horse in a second.
Howdy, Steve.
Howdy, Jace. Got a walkie-talkie message. You were coming. Didn't come down the road to meet you because we wanted to get the body out of here. The medical examiner can't do much till we get it into town.
Where is the body?
Back there on a pack mule with the sheriff's deputies. I'm leading the way down.
Yeah, might as well get moving then. I'll ride with you.
Right. All right, we're going to move again. Follow this gully all the way down and watch your step. Come on, boy.
Come on, Sharky. Any line on how long he's been dead?
Not for sure, but I think it's going to fit in with what you're looking for. From what I can judge, he was killed Saturday night.
You got anything to back that up?
Yeah, the man's a cowpoke. Works on that ranch at the base of the ridge. He rode up here Saturday night to see some Mexican gal he's been courting. But he never did get back to the ranch after he left her shack.
I wonder why anybody traveled all the way up here to kill him. He was ambushed on the way back to the ranch. It'd been just as easy for the killer to wait until he hit the flat down by the ranch.
Funny you should say that.
Why?
Because he was shot down on the flat.
Well, then how'd his body get up here?
Near as I can figure, he started to ride back up to get help. He wasn't killed right off, fell out of the saddle and died where he fell.
Seems to me he'd have ridden onto the ranch for help.
Well, the ranch house is 11 miles off. Back up this way was only 1 mile. Chase, I'll be able to show you the whole thing when we get down. I'll follow his tracks both ways. Say, you leave your car near mine?
Yeah.
Well, the shooting took place not far from where we're parked. There was a break in the fence there and the marks of a truck, but they weren't deep enough to make a cast of them.
You mean whoever gunned him had a truck down there?
Yeah, that's right, Chase. Well, say, there are cattle tracks all over the place, too.
That might mean he surprised somebody who was trying to run some stock off the place.
Yeah, not only trying, but succeeding. A few white faces that were grazing in that section can't be located. Hey, this fit in with your doctor killing?
Depends on whether your cowpoke was killed by a .45 and whether he returned fire and hit one of the men he saw down there.
Well, he fought with him, all right. He was carrying a saddle rifle. He dropped it when he got hit, I reckon. I found it beside his tracks down below. Already sent it on to Austin.
Only one thing you got to tell me, then, and I'll know if the two killings go hand in hand. What kind of a rifle was the cowpoke using?
What kind you looking for, Jace?
Savage 303.
You got a case. That's what it was.
In just a moment, we will continue with Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson.
Three chimes mean good times on NBC. We're boasting a little because here at NBC, you'll find the roughest, toughest, most romantic crime fighters ever assembled under one network roof. Take Wednesday evening, for example. On Wednesdays, you'll hear action with Mr. District Attorney, The Big Story, and that new daring private eye, Rex Saunders, played by Rex Harrison. So just keep your mystery ear glued to your NBC station every Wednesday.
We continue now with Tales of the Texas Rangers and tonight's case, No Living Witnesses, an authentic story from the files of the Texas Rangers.
The cowpoke and Dr. Hemet had been killed by the same man, all right. Ballistics proved the bullet dug out of the floor from under the doctor was a twin to the .45 taken out of the murdered cowpoke. Steve Clark and I put our horses in the double trailer I was towing and headed for Harper's Landing.
Ballistic boys at the lab didn't take long comparing those slugs, did they?
I never do.
It all fits. They even test fired the cowpoke's rifle. It fired the slug Doc Hammett took out of that patient we're looking for.
We're not only looking for him, we're going to find him and whoever was with him.
There must be more than one man, all right. What you told me about the blood on that piece of denim shirt, he couldn't have been in any condition to drive by himself, not all the way to Harper's Landing.
Yeah, 70 miles. And he must have known he was going to need a doctor.
Hey, you look like that gives you an idea.
It does. I think it answers a question the sheriff asked me. Why they killed the doc instead of just tying him up?
And what's the answer?
They killed him because they didn't just happen by his place. They knew Doc Hammett, and he knew them.
That's a big conclusion, Jace.
It's not hard to reach, either. Look, Steve, Doc Hammett's house in Harper's Landing isn't on the main street through town. It's on a side street, not easy to find in the middle of the night, unless you knew where it was. Not only that, but they had to pass through two bigger towns on the way there, towns with more than one doctor. Steve, if you were shot and wanted to keep it covered, but you had to be treated, what would you do?
Well, go to my own family doc, I reckon, and hope that I could talk him into keeping it quiet. Hey, you're right, Jace. That means the men we're after must live in or near Harper's Landing.
Let's say on a ranch somewhere outside the town, someplace they could have taken stolen cattle.
We know the brand mark and those stolen white faces. Say, are we going to do some range riding?
Until we find them. Until they show up for sale at some commission house or auction barn.
You think the sheriff will be willing to ride with us?
Of course he will. Doc Hammett was a friend of his, and the sheriff doesn't take to killers.
Larson Ranch is about 2 miles farther on. Might stop there and get some grub if you'd like.
I'm all for it, Sheriff.
How about it, Jace? Haven't taken much eating time for the past 2 days.
Why don't you just grab a handful of range grass? It's loaded with vitamins.
You'll be loaded with buckshot if you come up with any more ideas like that.
Yeah, come on, Jace, before we get so skinny that a gust of wind will lift us right out of the saddle.
Okay. I guess the horses can use a rest.
You see there, Sheriff? He don't care about us, just the horses.
Look who's talking. I never saw you sit down to a meal without seeing to it that your horse was fed and watered first.
I was only kidding, Jace. Let's get out of that Larson place.
Right. Get up, boy.
Okay. Get up, Turkey.
I wish we'd find some sign of those white faces. We must have looked over a couple of thousand head without finding a single altered brand.
They gotta be around, Steve. They haven't been sold through any commission house or barn. All records have been checked back through last Saturday.
Yeah, we better find them soon before too many people know what we're doing. Ranchers who've seen us know we're not riding this range for exercise.
Yeah, that the Larson Ranch off there to the right of the mesa?
There? Nope, that place belongs to Yancey Coburn and his son, Jed.
Yeah, pull up a minute.
Oh, boy. Yeah, those cattle are acting kind of funny, Jace.
Yeah. Disturbed and excited, milling around.
Can't see any reason for it. Wide open range. No sign of a coyote or a mountain cat.
Yeah, it must be something they smell. I've seen them act just that way when a beef has been slaughtered on the range. Blood smell stirs them up and they start bunching just like that.
No, nothing in that herd to interest us, though, Jace. Can see none of them's white faces.
Yeah, white parts might have been painted over. You know, that kind of camouflage been used before.
I can't tell till we get close up. We're going to have to check them sooner or later. Might as well be now.
Well, there goes our lunch, Steve.
Yeah, I guess they eat on the Coburn place, too.
Yeah, but Yancey and Jed ain't exactly hospitable. Well, come on. Get up, boy.
Yeah.
Up, Sharky.
Yeah, they're bunching right along Coburn's fence line.
That's good. We won't have to cut the fence. We can just tie the horses off there and climb through.
They sure are acting up.
All right, hold up. Sharky.
I'll hold the wire, Jace.
Thanks. Climb through, Sheriff, and I'll come through and hold it for Steve.
Right.
Okay, Steve. Come ahead.
Okay. I'm clear. Let it go.
Yeah. Ain't no strange stock here, Jace. They're all wearing Coburn's brand.
Yeah, I can't spot any that have been altered. Besides, there's not a white face in the lot. I can see that plain now. What are they so head up about?
It beats me. What are you looking at, Jace?
Tracks. The way they've been milling around. Marks form a big circle. The boulder over there seems to be the middle of it. They move up toward it, and they start to mill and pull back. Come on.
Wow. Look at the mess of red ants around that boulder.
Why, they're just pouring in and out of that varmint hole under it. Hey, look at them.
That hole's bigger than it looks. Most of it's been covered by the boulder. Hey, let's see if we can move it out, Steve.
Yeah. Jam too tight, Jake.
Yeah, there's enough of an opening for my arm. I'll stretch flat and stick my hand down there.
Well, watch out, Jake. You'll get ants all over you.
I don't care about the ants so much. I just hope I don't get a mess of gopher teeth in my hand.
Feel anything down there?
Yeah. Look, quick line.
Hey, Jake, you better wash that off right away.
I will. You got your wire clippers?
Sure. What's the matter?
Cut the fence and bring the horses through. We're going to pull this boulder.
Why, Jace? What's down there?
It felt like a bunch of fresh-skinned beef hides. They were hides, all right. Stripped from a half dozen white face. The place where the brands should have been were burned over to obliterate what had been there. Packed the hides on our horses and headed for the Coburn Ranch House.
They sure wiped out any proof on those hides, Jace.
Yeah. There wasn't something wrong with them. They wouldn't have gone to the trouble of hiding them.
Pretty smart butchering the stuff before they sold it.
Probably figured every commission house in the state would be watching for brands. They couldn't risk altering them, and they couldn't risk keeping the stock around. You seen the Coburns lately, Sheriff?
Haven't seen Jed for some time, but I saw Yancey only last night at the drugstore in town.
Yeah? He buying something?
Yeah, he was. A lot of stuff. Bandages, adhesive tape. I saw the druggist wrapping it up.
Sounds like the stuff he'd need to change dresses on a bad wound, Jace.
Hey, we're coming to their sheds. The house is just the other side of them.
Ride right into the sheds. Leave the horses there. I don't want them to see these hides yet.
Okay. Here we are. Oh, boy.
Take a look on that floor there, Jace. Over there.
Yeah. One spot cleaned up mighty good.
Look at the beam right over it. Meat hooks. A little blood on them.
Yeah, must have done his butchering right here. Made awful sure to get that floor clean.
Let's go talk to him.
There's Yancey now at the back screen door.
Howdy, Yancey.
What you fellas want on my place?
The Rangers want to have a little talk with you.
I ain't got much time for talking. I got work to do.
And so have we. Where's your son?
I don't know.
What do you mean, you don't know?
Just like I said, I don't know. Now, anything else I can help you with?
Don't get smart, Yancey. You know where Jed is, you better talk up.
He took himself a little trip down to Mexico.
Suppose you invite us in and tell us all about it.
Reckon I don't have to have you in if I don't want you, Sheriff.
He's perfectly right, Sheriff. So Steve and I'll just wait here while you ride into town and get a warrant. Then we can invite ourselves in.
You want to make us do it the hard way, Yancey?
I ain't got nothing to hide. Want to come in? Come in.
You keep a gun in the house?
Shotgun there in the corner by the stove.
How about a .45, Yancey?
Never owned one.
You haven't slaughtered any beef lately either, have you?
Any log in it?
Nobody said there was. Stashing the hides away under a boulder is a little bit unusual.
You're getting kind of pale, Yancey.
There ain't no...
What'd you stop for, Yancey? You're about to say there aren't any brand marks left on those hides, weren't you?
You putting words in my mouth.
Choose your own words, but answer me. Tell the truth. Where's your son, Jed?
I told you he's...
He's not in Mexico. He's holed up someplace recovering from a wound. The wound Doc Hemet was killed for treating.
I don't know what you're talking about. Jed ain't here, I tell you.
Jace, look at that ladder there in the corner.
Just a ladder? I was fixing to do some paint.
A man who's going to paint usually buys some paint before he brings a ladder in. What's that up in the ceiling?
Looks like an entry into the attic.
Get out of here! Get out of here! Get your hands off that shotgun!
Oh. That's better. I'll hold this for safekeeping. You might hurt somebody.
Keep him covered, Steve. I'm going to use that ladder and see what we got upstairs.
I'll help you, Jace. Jed's probably up there, and he ain't the kind to come quiet if he's cornered.
That's right, Sheriff! Get covered, Sheriff!
Kill him, Jed!
Get up, Yancey! Don't move!
Be smart, Jed. You can't get out of that attic.
No, but I can blow the head off of anyone who comes up here to take me. I gotta see you first, remember that?
We don't have to come up after you, Jed. We can rake every foot of that ceiling with gunfire. Yeah, that's just a sample. You can make it look like a sieve, and you look like one with it. Now you better get down here with your father while you still got the chance.
Come down, Jed, come down or they'll kill you. We didn't do nothing, they can't prove nothing.
How about it, Jed?
All right. But my leg is hurt. You have to bring a ladder on to help me down.
Sure, just to make it friendly. Open that trap all the way and drop your gun down here.
All right.
Yeah, that's better. All right, Sheriff. Set the ladder up again. This is the gun we wanted, Steve.
Yeah, .45.
All right, Jed. Ease yourself down and I'll help you.
All right. My leg hurts. Come. Look, we didn't do nothing.
And that's all we're ever going to see. We didn't do nothing here.
You'll love it up in Huntsville, then. It's full of innocent fellows just like you. You ready, Steve?
Yeah.
Sheriff?
All set, Jace.
Good. All right, Yancey, Jed, get moving.
Throughout their trial, Yancey and Jed Coben steadfastly denied any crime. However, Jed's blood type matched the blood found in the office of Dr. Hemet, and ballistic experts definitely identified his .45 caliber gun as the weapon used to murder both Dr. Hemet and the cowboy whose body was found on Thunder Ridge. It took the jury less than 2 hours to bring in a verdict of guilty. The Cobens were sentenced to Huntsville Penitentiary for the rest of their natural lives.
Here again is the star of our show, Joel McRae.
I believe you'll enjoy an amusing story I heard recently. It comes from a young lady who lives in the Lone Star State. It seems that a Sunday school teacher was making quite an impression with the little ones in her class as she told how the pharaohs of early Egypt drove the children of Israel from that land. A little fellow in the front row was biting his nails fiercely as the teacher went on to describe the cruelties inflicted upon the Israelites, how they were beaten and driven forth without food or water. When the story was over, the young fry stared straight ahead. Finally, he snapped,
"Gee whiz, where were the Texas Rangers?"
See you next week, folks. Good night.
Next week, Joel McRae in another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Joel McRae is currently seen starring in the Universal International Technicolor production, Frenchie. Tonight's cast included Tony Barrett, Virginia Gregg, Herb Ellis, Ed Begley, and Parley Bear. This story was transcribed and adapted by Joel Murcott, and the program was produced and directed by Stacy Keats. Hal Gibney speaking.
Texas Rangers. There was no living witness was the title of that. That was episode 42. An original air date the 6th of May, 1951. Interesting. Parley Bear was in it. Virginia Gray. All the same names and players that seem to recur in a lot of these dramas. This was 1951, yeah, so it was still the golden age of radio, still had some time there before it dwindled, or before it became obsolete, more likely, more appropriately. This has been Arthur here on the Grand Hour this morning, 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford, and or WMFO.org. I'm going to close out this set with a bit of music. Nothing fancy. Just, you typically can't go wrong with the Beatles. Thanks for listening. Oh,